Slime Wire. Choose your own adventure.
We'll be right back. worst nightmare.
Evil son, neither you numb, you niggas can't run. Blow you up like in Vietnam. Torture your body, your souls. I take one of the honeys to wrap on my anomalous slug. Leave your body in a blueprint run. Evil son calling you niggas so calm. Look into the eyes of the mask when I blast. Leave your body land dead in the grass. Roots have been cutting you up like Freddy. Blessing you with this hole in the machete. Deadly dreams, I'm hearing sirene. As I hear these silent screams, 1, 2, we coming for you. Evil son known as a demon and fiend. Diminishing you with the blink of an eye. Your body giving off a smell. Walking through four corners just like walking through the gates of hell. Ash to ashes, dust to dust, a psychopath going into a rage. Lucifer been holding you down as I slice you up with razor blades. Boy, your skin, I have no friends. I'm giggling with an evil grin. Taking control of your soul, I'm so bold. Sticking a pitchfork up your nose. Glancing to this crystal ball. Busters end up midnight maker. Evil son and crucifix. Taking your soul, cause we just so take.
You fucked up, it's time for capillin. You talk about fighting, I'm talking about killing. Crucifix in this bitch for the nonsense. You talking this shit, now you're gone with that bitch. We coming out heartbreaking slugs, what's up? Mother, your life in your back, catch a slug. Man in that saber, I'm safe, but I ain't gon' blow up like some bombs. You come and get some. Niggas, I'm jacking my mind and just snapping. You could be hit, your wig out was split. I'm going on talk, crucifix got it, y'all. Crushing your nest to the point you can't walk. My hand a cast down on the back of your ride. You gonna die, crucifix gon' be a lie. Blood and someone, your heart gon' be blown. Up out of your chest, cause I put you to rest. The devil keep telling me, kill every buster. Crucifix gotta do what Satan say. Crucifix blowing these niggas away in the midst of a river, your body gon' lay. I'm barring a buster, I'm a motherfucker. Bruising my knuckle while serving these suckers. Listen to me as I talk to myself. I promise you, busters gon' meet your death. Walk through the mountain with a devil, look on my face. Mass murderer, leaving no trace. Scared of the dog, climbing you hard. Taking your souls I take. Scoping the scene with an infrared beam. Slicing the dice, I'll follow a guillotine. Bring your dreams and watch them diminish. Come to my clips, it still ain't finished.
I gotta take a wrong thing. I'm pointed at the fool face. We creep with the gloves. We take them to their stash bar. I gotta take a wrong thing. I'm pointed at the fool face. We creep with the gloves. We take them to their stash bar. I gotta take a wrong thing. I'm pointed at the fool face. We creep with the gloves. We take them to their stash bar. I gotta take a wrong thing. I'm pointed at the fool face. We creep with the gloves. We take them to their stash bar.
Who can you run?
too. Once you're surrounded by niggas with ticks, so take a zone and quit. Time to collect mix, fuck with spigma sweat dripping off of your face, lightning is so frightening. To me it's exciting, chasing white folks through the woods. When they fall, y'all know it's all good. Micah Myers set them on fire, light up fluid, there's nothing to it. Look up at the moon, I can see it's kinda full. My hair grows long as I turn to a werewolf, chasing just like Jason. Gotta have more than a gun for this leprechaun. As I say, wanna play blood, look sugar, take a soul like chugger. Scary looking eye, baby, don't be surprised when I wake up in the morning. Someone dead on the news, got mud on my shoe, but I swear I was sleep. Bloodshed, leave a clue like I don't tell the truth. Witchcraft, as quick as that hoe won't be witch. I'm a rocket, leave a nigga in the ditch. Soul takers, bank breakers, like Lex Luger. My item fit the Kruger. Tails, run the Grim Reaper, so the crib keeper. Gotta let me know when the kill. Norman Bass come wave, so shot him up a bit. As he bled, we call Pinhead. Went to the bathroom, looked in the mirror, no prayer, said Candyman, night by time. Grab my Smith and Wesson, flicked on the light, tell me right, didn't have no reflection.
Probably forget about it.
Stop! See you real soon.
Slime Wire. Choose your own adventure.
All right, well, I guess we're ready to go. I started recording. So, yes. Mahalo, everybody. Welcome Mahalo. To the Slime Wire podcast. This is episode 2862. I am your host, Tritonti2, and I'm joined by Ikemen Sensei. What's up, dude?
Good afternoon to you. I'm doing quite well out here. It's a beautiful autumn day. And what's going on over there on the other side of the pond?
Not much. I'm pretty chill. I had a weird conversation with my dad today.
Nice.
I sort of told you a little bit about it earlier.
Oh, yeah.
He asked me about, well, first off, we talked about Israel, Palestine. This is the Hamas Hard Vapor Halloween episode.
Triple H.
Out of the way. We've been trying to do a Halloween episode for years.
3 years.
Somehow it never quite worked out. Missed it every single time. But we're here. Yes. We came in super clutch this time. We collectively watched... eight fucking horror movies. And did not listen to any spooky vaporwave.
Yeah, no.
But anyway, I say this because when I was talking to my dad, we brought up the Israel Palestine thing.
Yeah.
And my dad, he said the worst thing to come out of this is this rise in anti-Semitism. Sure. I was very surprised to hear him say. And then he literally said, you know, I've never been a big supporter of the Jewish people. But all this hate coming out of nowhere has just got to stop.
And yeah, yeah.
He just said a bunch of dumb boomer stuff.
Dude, hard agree. That's a take I can get behind, not being a supporter of the Jewish people.
It was very funny that he just said that. I don't know. I guess in his mind, he's a Christian, and so...
Oh, yeah. Christians versus Jews. Well, I mean, yeah, most of the Christians that live in that area live in Palestine. So they're getting the shit bombed out of them. So if you're a Christian, you should be pro-Palestinian, I guess? You know?
What I'm noticing... is that, and this is all I'm going to say about it, I really don't want to talk about this at all, but it's similar to in the early days of the George Floyd BLM stuff, where it seems to be an entirely generational divide, where basically the boomers that are watching cable news are like, what's going on? Terrorism? Anti-Semitism?
You
gotta stop this.
Yeah.
But then every young person that isn't watching cable news and is instead on social media is like, are you're telling me Israel's been starving Palestinians for 40 years?
We gotta put an end to it.
Yeah, what's going on? We gotta stop this. You know?
Yeah. There's no good response, and we should leave it alone. All I would say is, as a millennial, I find I need to be pro-Palestinian. And it's really, I will just cop to it being my age range, and it's what everybody else is doing. And I don't want to go, I don't want to go talk to somebody and get into this argument right now, you know? So I'm pro-Palestinian just to not piss anybody off. However, I do find myself trying to figure out ways that I could be a supporter of Israel. Just because the people who are pro-Palestine annoy me so much.
Yeah, they are annoying. There's one guy that I follow on Instagram that's been posting a lot about it, but I always find it funny how it'll be like, it's like all their Instagram stories are about like all these horrible like war atrocities, and then they'll be like, man, don't you just love when you can cuddle up to your kitty and like Mac DeMarco.
I feel like the strategy that happens now is that people will sandwich their stories of like, I don't know, big block text about like, this is the ethical stance that we need to take towards Israel and Palestine, and if you don't support this, your silence is will not go unnoticed. And they sandwich that between like, yeah, okay, Barbie Halloween and like, you know, fucking pumpkins. And I think that's kind of like the raising of the white flag by millennials. And I think you'll see more of that as millennials get older. And, we're not going to admit that we were wrong. Certainly not. But we will, we just kind of try to push that into the back, push that into the back of the garage where nobody notices it.
Yeah, and then the other thing my dad said to me, which was very, very interesting, was that he asked me if I knew who Jordan Peterson was. I thought that was really funny. My dad's a big proponent of Candace Owens. He loves Candace Owens. And then, yeah, now I guess he's just on YouTube, like, looking at the related videos. So now my dad, in 2023, is getting into Jordan Peterson as a 75-year-old man.
Just a step away from being... Your dad's getting on my dad's level. Soon he'll be backstage Twitter dad. He'll be reading Grey Mirror. He'll be reading Sam Chris's Substack for an alternative opinion, and looking at Derridian deconstruction Substacks.
Yeah, he's gonna get really into Curtis Yarv.
Yeah. He's gonna be reading the old unqualified reservations. Yeah, the old unqualified reservations thing. He'll be looking at the Less Wrong forums. It's gonna be great. We should introduce them. Your dad could learn a lot from my dad.
I think my dad would feel emasculated or something by your dad.
Yeah, but like, dude. I mean, yeah, like my dad asked me that basically that exact same question in person around like the Thanksgiving table in like 2017, something. Yeah, it was like,
well, that's when you should be getting into Jordan Peterson. If you're going to do it, you're going to pick a time.
He peaked at 2017. And I mean, like, by God, getting into him now, I feel like your dad has probably watched like the old YouTube videos, but show him what he's doing nowadays. And it's like,
So tempting to tell him about the Serbia thing.
Yeah, yeah. And like
the all-meat diet thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the Klonopin and the fucking Russian inpatient, like, psychiatric treatment and shit. Yeah, I mean,
his
like...
His daughter dressing up like a lobster.
Yeah. Have you seen his tweets that are happening now? The tweets that he does now?
The ones where he's just, like, writing in this weird vernacular.
Yeah, it's like a Rupi Kaur poem where it's, like, it's one word at a time, you know?
Yeah, it's like it's a amazing. Shel Silverstein, like, book.
Seriously, yeah, it's amazing. It's great.
And like, the dumb suits that he's been wearing is very funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I actually did see a quote. This is, again, relating back to the stupid Israel-Palestine stuff, but do you know who Ethan Klein is, the fucking H3 guy?
Oh, yeah, the guy who got really fat?
Yeah, he got really fat, and he's, like, big friends with Hassan Piker, and, like, now they're, like, fighting because of Israel and Palestine, because he's Israeli and his wife was, like, in the IDF.
And, savage, dude.
Yeah, and so, like, and then Jordan Peterson, like, way back when he interviewed Jordan Peterson, and then he deleted the interviews, and then Jordan Peterson wrote, like, an open letter to him on Twitter that was like, one day you will, the mob will go for you gleefully, and they will destroy you, and, like, and it's totally true. I mean, Jordan Peterson was right in that context, and it's very funny. So Jordan Peterson did take a dub recently.
Yeah.
But I think it's funny how, like, in 2016 it was, like, a conspiracy theory that, like, you know, Steve Bannon was hijacking Facebook analytics and then, like, hiring alt-right meme trolls to, like, make memes to appeal to boomers and, like, radicalize them.
Yeah.
And it's totally worked. That's exactly what happened to my dad.
Yeah. Like,
He's just watching SJW cringe compilations that, like, Nico was watching in 2015.
I know. Yeah. I feel like it's, like, the fantasy that we have now is that our parents will be, like, out of touch, you know? And we want to feel bad for our parents as they slowly lose touch with reality and understanding what the current, you know, what the world is like now. But the much worse reality is that they are keeping up with current events, you know. They are, like, they are becoming fucking, like, meme, like, socially isolated gooners, you know. Much worse than anybody could have imagined. So, yeah, they're not shrinking into irrelevance. They're basically doing the same thing that, like, we were doing when we were, like, 16, 17, you know, retreating into our basements and going on internet forums, you know, except they're 65. Yeah, yeah, dude. You're fucked up.
My dad's 75. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's crazy. It sucks ass. Yeah.
it's very weird. That's all I have to say about that. Did you have anything going on, any spooky events? How is Halloween celebrated over in the Orient? I imagine a lot of the cultural signifiers get translated sort of poorly.
It's like it's a new holiday. They haven't had much practice doing it. So it's only recently that, like, stores will stock Halloween decorations and shit, you know. But they don't trick-or-treat. They'll maybe do a little bit of candy sometimes. Like, schools will organize little trick-or-treating things, and so you'll see, like, little kids with their teachers walking around and en masse in, like, the middle of the day. But they don't really trick-or-treat. Girls are getting keyed into the idea of dressing up as sluts during Halloween. So that's the thing. Cool. Yeah, that's the thing that you'll see. And in Tokyo, there's been, like, a long-running tradition of Shibuya Halloween. Shibuya is, like, the fashion district of Tokyo, and there's usually a huge Halloween party, a massive, debaucherous Halloween party where foreigners go and fuck shit up. It's a huge nightmare for everybody involved. It's just a bunch of blackout drunk fucking Australian bros sexually assaulting the Japanese women there, and, you know, busting fucking storefronts and shit. It's a nightmare. Yeah. It's a nightmare every year for the city, but it is a big, you know, it's a big event. That's been going on for a while. But yeah, other than that, I'd say probably, like, a young adult thing. Get dressed up as a sexy witch or whatever, and you go out on the town. But yeah, other than that, it's mostly been imported wholesale from the United States without really any cultural changes. Okay. For the most part.
That's what's up. That's you talking about the Fashion District thing. It sucks that there's no more IRL streamers in Japan right now.
Oh my god, yeah. It would be...
There's one that's in Japanese prison, I believe, right now.
Oh, yeah.
He got caught, like, annoying people on the train, which...
Yeah, that's really bad. Like, that guy's gonna get tortured.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
I was actually just reading about the conditions inside a Japanese prison, and it's, it's insane. You're not allowed to talk. And if you do talk, you're only allowed to talk in Japanese. Yeah, if you get sent to solitary confinement, you have to sit on your knees, with your hands on your knees, on the floor from like 7 a.m. until 5 p.m. and you can't move. So, yeah, it's really bad.
I'm sure that's what that guy is going through right now.
Yeah, like, that guy's not... Somali. That guy's not gonna... be having a good time. Well, there's also, I was reading, like, I don't know what phase of the process he's going to, and also the Japan legal system will, like, basically they will do anything to avoid having a foreigner inside the prison because they don't want to expose the hate crimes that they commit regularly in there, you know? So okay.
Especially one that is known for live streaming themselves.
Yeah, so he might be like in like the court or the county jail right now, and he'll get let out when he's gonna go to trial, and then when he goes to trial, they will like deport him or something. That's what I would imagine would happen for the most part, unless you commit a serious crime. You're probably not going to Japanese jail. So,
okay, well, be safe out there. Don't go to Japanese
prison. Yeah, I really take all of the measures to avoid Japanese jail, dude. Yeah.
Okay.
I go.
Well, that's our introduction segment. Yeah. We do have a few topics to get into. I'll start with the vaporwave one because this is, of course, a vaporwave-centric podcast.
Yes, in case you've forgotten.
So, Ikemen, you really need to get back on Twitter, because then you would know everything that's going on with this. I understand that it's bad for your mental health, but it's good for the show.
Yeah, it's an L that I might have to take. I understand, but to what extent do I sacrifice? I mean, it's more of a moral thing.
More. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Besides, well, it's not I'm in Twitter anymore. It's X, but
yeah,
it's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I'm currently in a fight with my girlfriend about whether social media is good or bad, and if I did that, I would lose ground in that fight.
So she wants you on social media.
She wants me to post. She wants me posting, and I am staunchly against any form of posting. So okay. I, getting back on Twitter now, I might do it in secret, you know, might have a secret account.
Just get a lurk account, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So that would be an option that I would consider, but yeah, maybe I'll do it. I might do it.
Anyway, well, if you were on Twitter, you would have seen all of the hullabaloo surrounding this new bootleg vaporwave label called Virtual Algorithm.
Yeah.
Virtual Algorithm, you can find all their releases on virtualalgorithm.net. Their main goal is to just bootleg and sell tapes that are never, ever going to be like made again. Because either the artist isn't interested in it, or they're, you know, in some sort of legal situation. Mm. So you can look here at some of the releases they've done. They've done a lot of old Telepath releases. They did Hit Vibe, Saint Pepsi. They did all the Atmospheres albums. They did Farside Virtual.
Yeah.
They did, you know, the Telepath, the racist Telepath alias.
Ah, which will remain nameless on the show. Yeah.
So they're a bit edgy. And the cohort of people that support them, as you can imagine, is, you know, Oskov and all of those guys.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so they recently, they did a Luxury Elite album called With Love, which the reason that that was never getting released or physicals made of it was basically because it was originally released with a label called AM Discs, which I guess is like super like hardcore about like you can never, like you have to give us your album when we release it for you. This was way back in like 2014 or 2013 or something. And so, yeah, Luxury Elite was never ever going to repress this album for fear of, like, you know, some sort of lawsuit or whatever. So Virtual Algorithm just did it. And they also had Luxury Elite blocked when they did it on Twitter. Nice. So then Luxury Elite just sort of found out about it through hearsay, posted that this label blocked her, and then released her album. And then, yeah, a bunch of people got really mad about it, and it sparked a new debate, the same old debate in Vaporwave about, you know, what is transformative, what are these guys doing to, you know, push these releases further, is it allowed to just bootleg this shit, is it art, is it not? I think that that argument is kind of insane, because this is a bootleg label that is bootlegging tape.
So
they're not claiming to do anything transformative. They are just releasing one-to-one copies, but people are like bringing up the transformative sample debate because they believe that what they're doing is art, and specifically Felix Flutter is very mad about this.
He's mad against these people.
He's mad at them.
Predictably. Have you gotten any more internet fights with Felix Flutter since I left Twitter?
I'm constantly fighting with Felix Flutter on Twitter. I'm always fighting with Felix Flutter on Twitter. He's like probably the person I reply to the most. Because it's just, it's so fun. He writes everything so like ironically. How to describe his verbose writing style and bringing up these bizarre like relics of the 90s and being like, why isn't Vaporwave more like this trip hop group?
Citing scientific studies and
But it's all love. I respect Felix Flutter for what, you know, he's the heel. He's my heel, baby. I do respect Felix Flutter, and he respects me, and it's all in good jest. But yes, we do get into it from time to time.
Okay, that's good to hear. I'm glad that beef is still going. it sounds like these guys are not... I mean, a separate but equal debate that's still worth having is whether there's, you know, they're archivists, they're into preservation, digital preservation of art, and they want to preserve these things even against the wishes of their original creator, which is not a new problem. People have had this problem for years, back when people were still doing like ROMs for like Game Boy Advance games, which is something I regret to say that I was into kind of during college. Like Nintendo would always like try to shut these guys down, and they said they were just doing it in the interest of preserving these things that didn't have any like platform for them anymore, right? So they argued that they were doing a service to the gaming community as a whole by allowing these old games that otherwise would have been completely forgotten to continue to exist. And it sounds like it's a very similar thing here. These guys are for the purposes of archiving, keeping alive. They are trying to resurrect these old dead projects. Although they are doing it in order to turn a profit, it sounds like.
I mean, any profit that they're making, I imagine, is just going back into the production of the tapes.
Yeah, of course.
You know, they're self-dubbing them, from what I can understand. Yeah. That requires a lot of work and a lot of effort, a lot of time. So.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I can't imagine this argument taking place unless it specifically was because he's being supported by these sort of vaporwave pariahs, and he was not respectful towards luxury elite specifically, because luxury elite is like the face of like the woke, like, you know, just great vaporwave scene, nice to everybody, you know.
The cringe centrist vaporwave scene.
I mean, I don't think that luxury elite is cringe or like centrist. She's actually kind of beige. She actually thinks that vaporwave should be more sample based, but she's just like, she's never gonna start a problem with somebody.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but then people think, are mad. Yeah,
her music, like, her music is also very accessible and like fun and, you know, poppy and stuff. So it's not like it's, you know, but that's just what she does.
Yeah, and that even like in the early days of the scene, she like caught flack for that, like her and St. Pepsi, and people were calling them broker way back broker in the ways. Day.
Yes. So to me, this just sounds like another silly controversy that I think if you're true to the ethos of vaporwave, you're gonna let these guys do their work, okay? And it sounds like they are trying to. It sounds like they have they have good taste, right?
Yes. The next record that they're doing is New Deluxe Life, Upgrade Your Life, based.
Yeah.
Based fucking selection there.
Yeah, for sure. So they, I mean, as long as they. I feel like more important than the ethics of what they're doing is the kind of music they're doing it to. Whether it deserves to continue. Whether that music deserves to continue to shine on in the vaporwave scene. And I'd argue that it does. And so I think it's not controversial that we should put our support behind our Virtual Algorithm and all the great work they're doing.
I support everything Virtual Algorithm does. I would also like to say, like, if you're one of these people on Twitter that is, like, looking up the legal, like, copyright laws and sending them to people and being like, this is how you can sue them. Like, you are a scab.
You're a top. Yeah. Like,
this is vaporwave, bro. Like, now bootlegs are off the table? Like, what's going on?
Like, for sure. Not
the cultural... the countercultural scene anymore.
Absolutely.
Concerned with stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm perusing their what they got so far, and these are all physical tapes that they're making.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then another part of the controversy is that they also have a Bandcamp page where they have all the albums listed as Name Your Own Price. So you could just like stream the Luxury Elite album and pay $1 for it, or $0, which I imagine most people are doing, or they're probably streaming that from Luxury Elite's own Bandcamp instead.
For sure. Yeah, I don't see really anything wrong with doing this. Again, like, that's a good point that you made, that any profit they're making is definitely going back into just, because like, the amount of people that are interested in paying money for these specific tapes, or, you know, buying these albums online, is going to be so small that there's no way that like they're gonna be turning any profit with this.
I mean, if you are like really against bootlegs and like bootleg culture, I'm sure like there are much larger operations going on that are worthy of your ire. You know, go to fucking China and yell at the guy with all the DVDs, you know.
Like, yeah, for sure.
Don't be beating up this random vaporwave dude.
Definitely. All right, well, more power to you, Virtual Algorithm. We hope that you continue what you're doing. There's a couple of classic Triton T2 tapes, cuts, that maybe you'd be interested in reproducing.
Yeah, well, I did one album on cassette, and that was an edition of 12 copies, so it's very rare.
Yeah. But,
yeah, if you want to reboot that one, I highly doubt it. So I guess that's basically that. Moving on, I'd like to inform the people This is very spooky, scary, you know, change of events. Chris Chan is back. And this is only relevant because we did that one Chris Chan episode. It was one of the best and worst episodes we've ever done because we had, you know, Shinzon 009 on there trying to explain the lore to us and
drunk. And yeah, that was a good era. Yeah, he brought that drunken energy that the show was missing. Definitely.
That was a great era. Yeah, and like I didn't know much about Chris Chan prior to that, and like ever since then I've sort of been keeping up on the lore and, you know, reading the letters he was writing from jail. So I just like I want everybody to be aware of this, and I want everybody to be afraid.
Yeah. Hide your mothers.
Hide your mothers. But
he's back. Chris Chan's back in town.
He's back. And he's got a new love interest, possibly.
There's
this girl that he's been spotted with, and then he said that her name is Flutter and that she had contacted him while he was in jail. Yes. So
the first name Felix, perhaps?
That would be amazing. Same person. I don't think so. I think it's a reference to a My Little Pony character.
Okay, gotcha.
But it would be amazing if Felix Flutter's name was also a reference to My Little Pony. I wouldn't put it past him. Let me just say that.
Yeah.
But, so it's unclear whether this person is in Chris Chan lore. They're called weens. Weens are like people that get involved with Chris Chan to try and known in the troll lore.
Yeah.
Become famous off of Chris Chan's name, or if this is literally just some mentally ill woman that decided that she wanted to hook up with Chris Chan.
Well, I feel like being in jail gives like Chris Chan a little bit of, you know, jail cred, right?
A little bit of riz.
Oh, that. Yeah. Yeah, he's got like Marilyn Manson vibes now. You know?
Yeah. The content that he's been putting out is like pretty classic era like Chris Chan stuff. He's making these weird like music videos. Like I told you, he made like a 15-minute like singing video where he made this insane song about Team Rocket.
Yeah.
It's funny that he's bringing it. It was the first thing he, like, the after radio silence for like 2 years, he comes out and sings a song about Team Rocket. And
yeah,
I don't know if that's supposed to be some sort of like
code
metaphor or like,
No, I mean, it's impressive that like his single mindedness he's never faltered in his like dedication to fantasy world in which he lives. 2 years of being in jail, he was just probably thinking about the same shit that he did when he was out of jail, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But then the second video he did was a more straightforward, simply talking to the camera, and this is where he like tells the public about this girl named Flutter and also denies any and all allegations that he had sex with his mother. And, you know, he said that he didn't get charged with anything. He was released because he was found innocent.
Yeah.
And all this stuff. And a lot of people think he's lying. What do you think?
I feel like he probably, if he got released, like, what I would imagine is that like they couldn't find any conclusive evidence that he did it, so he had to be released. And I think probably to his brain, that means that he was innocent. You know,
like means he didn't.
Yeah.
Even if he did do it, he's innocent.
Yeah, he's innocent, so therefore he didn't actually do it. So that probably, because I mean, the evidence that everybody had that he had done that was stuff that he wrote.
And said, yeah, it was like a phone call. It was like a leaked phone call.
Yeah, so.
And then, like, some messages that he had sent to other people.
Yeah, so I feel like something doesn't add up. And he, you know, it's all going to be wild speculation from here on out until people, you know, infiltrate his life again. And figure it out. But, and I'm sure people are hot on the
Truman Show continues.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of time until the truth is revealed. However, For now, all we can do is speculate. I would be on the side of, yeah, he probably did it. I mean, sounds like he did it.
I don't know. I mean, what he said was that he was trying to trick a troll by admitting to a false narrative or something. Like,
yeah, that's got to be it. Imagine being the lawyer for Chris Chan in this whole debacle, you know?
Oh, man, that had to be a tough couple years.
Yeah.
I imagine that took a lot of their time.
Like, yeah.
Having to go through all of these chat logs and all of these various websites. And like,
yeah, being the public defense team for Chris Chan is not a rewarding task, for sure.
Yeah, and the mom is, you know, she's still alive, I guess. I don't think they're living together as of this point, but Chris has been spotted back at the house. So yeah. He has been there. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I think it's possible that he didn't do it because, you know, trolls will... That's if you're a Chris Chan troll, the ultimate goal is, like, for them, in their mind state, I'm not saying that I would ever do this or think that it's like a good thing to do, but the ultimate goal for them is to either make him kill himself or admit to having sex with his mother, you know.
Sure, that's true, but I feel like, well, even more than that, I mean, more than making him admit to having sex with his mother, the ultimate goal would be to get him to actually do it, you know.
That's
and I feel
true.
Like that's and you know, in any other case, it would be very hard to believe that somebody would do that. But in the Chris Chan case, he has been, like, I mean, people have pretty effectively hacked his mind to get him to do things. So, you know, it's not inconceivable that he would have done it.
Yeah, I wonder when the, like, the Netflix documentary is going to come out.
Dude, for sure. I mean, yeah, it's the most amazing story of the 21st century. Yeah. I mean, I feel like at this point, he really just should become like an online celebrity. Like, I don't know how he's not yet. Like, there's got to be
something. Because he's bad at it. That's like literally it. Like, because it's left up to him at the end of the day, and he can't do it.
He can't,
like, put the time. Like, it is hard. I mean, it's not hard to be an internet celebrity, but it requires a little bit of effort.
Yeah.
And yeah, Chris Chan just doesn't have it in.
Yeah. I mean, as you and I know, you don't get to, like, where we're at by, you know, just slacking off. You gotta put some elbow grease in.
Yeah, you gotta grind. You gotta put out, like, 30 episodes over the course of, like, 2 years.
Yeah. But yeah, best of luck to him. What was the other? So is he still making videos right now? He's only released two so far.
No, he released those main first two, and then he's been doing these plays. I haven't watched any of these, but there appear to be drawings, and it's called Angelica Rose Chew Christmas Play. Part 1, part 2, part 3, part 4. And they're all like 15 minutes long. He's up to part 5 as of 3 days ago. Part 5 was released.
Oh, well, that's good.
Angelica Rose Chew's Christmas Play. I don't think I have it in me to watch that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's a little too spooky.
The video where he talks about the sex. So the title of it is Setting the Record Straight. There never was any sex involving me in 2021.
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah, that's applies to my own life as well. I can identify with that.
Okay, well yeah, Chris Chan's back, very spooky. Just in time for the Halloween season. Let's move on to another topic.
Yeah, sounds good.
So the group, you know them, you love them. I don't know how much you are into Death Grips. Do you like Death Grips?
I mean, yeah, I like the stuff that I've heard. I've listened to their early, you know, the albums that were popular when we were in college. I gave them a couple playthroughs. And for
the most part, I love their first mixtape, Ex-Military. I used to listen to it all the time. Yeah. And then the one after that, Money Store, is pretty good. The one after that was pretty good, and I liked that it was just a giant erect penis was the cover of the album.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then everything after that I sort of fell off of. I was like, and then, yeah, they like sort of developed this really annoying fan base.
For sure.
Which, and the main, like, the leader of the Death Grips fan base is Anthony Fantano, which is just annoying. But I always thought that these guys were like huge badasses, you know? Punk rock, fucking hardcore dudes. And here they are on tour, and people are throwing glow sticks at them. Well, first somebody pissed in their pit, it's called a pit, right?
Yeah.
Mosh pit.
Yeah,
somebody peed in the mosh pit. And then people have been pelting them with glow sticks. And it has, like, pissed them off so much that they ended the tour.
Damn.
So, like, are these guys just huge fucking pussies, or, like, what? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, with stardom and with certain level of success, your standard of living life. And I imagine that's what happened to Death Grips. They're not going to put up with this bullshit anymore. You know, on the one hand, sure, like, it does go against everything Death Grips stood for to, like, indignantly cancel a show because of people throwing something at him. But on the other hand, you know, what's happened to the Death Grips fan base? Like, is it all now like Anthony Fantano style white dudes going to these shows and ironically pissing themselves in the pit? Is that what's happening now? So
there's been all these like Twitter threads about it, and like these like concerned fans like calling other people out, being like, this is not how you support an artist that you like, you know? It's just like, it's so silly. And then I guess there was also this meme where people were like, what's your Death Grips fit? Like, what are you wearing to the show? And some people would post themselves wearing like leather jacket, fucking combat boots, you know, with badass. One dude was like, oh, I'm wearing a striped shirt and a like hat with propellers on it.
I heard about this. Propeller hat.
So that's become a meme now that like annoying Death Grips fans are showing up wearing that outfit. And this is pissing them off too.
I imagine that like probably Death Grips' problem is less the glow sticks and more the like, those guys coming to their shows, you know? Like a certain kind of violence.
Fan base.
Yeah, a certain kind of violence should be encouraged by Death Grips, but like, the problem with the glow sticks is that it's too soft, right? A real Death Grips fan would be charging the stage in a, uppers induced frenzy. So,
throwing rocks at MC Ride's face.
Exactly. That's the kind of thing that they would, you know, they should encourage. But since people aren't doing that anymore, they're just doing glow sticks. So my feeling is that they called off the show because the fans weren't assaulting them enough.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's funny to me. I also feel like they shouldn't be on tour. Like, Death Grips should be.
I know,
They do, like, a show once every 2 years or something.
Yeah, I didn't even know they toured. You know? Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, that was the image that they gave off during their ascendancy, right? Like, they're this really underground thing. Nobody knows what it is. It's super fucking hardcore, and only the coolest people know about it, you know? But they've kind of become a meme of themselves.
Yeah. So, and I think they sort of, like, facilitated that by making sort of uninteresting shitty music. Or just like, I don't know, I just feel like they didn't ever like grow with the times, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And like what they're doing isn't like scary or subversive anymore. Because like of this whole, of the internet and the sort of fan base that sort of stuff creates. I mean, my old roommate is like really into them. I don't consider him to be a badass.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, dude. For me, the blame lies on the fans. As it always.
Yeah, I do enjoy that. I've sort of been like contrarian about them for many years now. After their like fourth album, I was like, no, I don't like them anymore. Fuck you.
Yeah.
For liking them, and now they've become lame again. So
yeah, called it.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, that was also probably around the time where I was getting into vaporwave. So I was like, nope, only vaporwave is cool.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is lame, and I was right. And yep. then I was wrong.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were the last interesting thing that was happening in like mainstream music for a long time. So credit where credit's due. And yeah, that first album, it came out of nowhere. You listen to it and you're like, oh my god.
Oh, that first album was fucking awesome.
Yeah, and Money Store too is like, holy
yeah, Money Store is real, real good.
Yeah, and I think for its time, it was like, you know, the digital age is getting started and they are figuring out how to do, how to incorporate digital music aesthetics into something that's really, really punk rock. So that's definitely a lasting achievement that they should not be forgotten for. However,
yeah.
their relevance in the current age is questionable.
Yeah, it's kind of like a really badass, like a G.G. Allin tour 20 years later. Where he's exactly. like, if he hadn't died, if he's just like a fat, depressed guy now.
Like, yeah, for
like,
sure.
Stop throwing poop at my face.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I just think it's funny. And then we have another topic.
Get out of here.
Before we enter the culture portion.
The main thrust. Yes.
So do you remember, of course, when Bandcamp was bought out by Epic Games, the same company that created Fortnite?
Yeah.
Well, Epic Games, they did nothing with Bandcamp. they didn't change a damn thing.
Yeah.
Basically, probably didn't make them much money, and so they just sold it again to what I originally thought was an NFT platform called SongTrader, but I guess it isn't an NFT platform. It's just like a bad... really bad like licensing service / streaming service.
Yeah,
you know, it's like a streaming service that nobody uses.
Yeah. I mean, it's that's the unfortunate fate of like all websites that turn 15 years old or 20 years old or whatever Bandcamp is now. They get sold to whatever, yeah, I'm a Holla at You Incorporated. So, there's, you know, they get sold to like a swaggy Indian startup company. So, yeah, that's just what happens. Bandcamp, the unofficial platform of Vaporwave, I'm not really sure what it brings to the table anymore to have releases on Bandcamp.
Yeah, everybody's going on Spotify anyway.
Yeah, you can just get it. You can just put your shit on Spotify now, and just have it be lost in an endless sea of content that nobody will ever find your music in. So
or care about it.
Yeah,
the algorithm will shove you next to George Clanton, and then everybody will just listen to that because that's really what they're there for.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're there to you get on Spotify to put on like cool playlists for driving around, going to the gym or whatever, and George Clinton's music is amenable to that. So,
yeah.
You know, it's good background music, so that's what's gonna get put on. And, I mean, that's the death of all underground music as we know it to the brutality of the algorithm. So, yeah, sorry about that, Bandcamp. I don't know, what is this SongTrader? Why is it bad? What's it wrong with it?
So what SongTrader did immediately was lay off half of the staff.
Nice.
And the majority of that was the editorial part of the staff.
Okay.
So, like, you know, when you go on Bandcamp,
yeah,
like I mean, I never fucking, like, went to bandcamp.com and looked at the front page.
Yeah.
If you do, they have all these articles that are like, oh, this Mongolian throat singing label. Or like, you know, they, like, find shit and, like, write little articles about it. So I think most of that is what got removed. But,
yeah, the human
element. I feel like this had to have been all just, like, fake email jobs, you know?
For sure, yeah. Yeah, you and write, like, one blurb a week about some new genre of music that people haven't heard of.
Yeah, and make, like, $60,000 a year doing it.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I have this, like, just the idea of, like, all these... Because I know people that, like, work in these jobs and stuff, and it's just, like, I do not believe that there's anything of value being created, and they're making way more money than anybody I know that does actual labor.
Yeah.
And I just feel like there's no way that this is sustainable.
Yeah.
And it's probably good for all of these people to lose their jobs. in the long term, it'll be better for the world if we just stop this fake, like, you go to college and immediately work from home writing emails and do nothing.
Yeah, yeah. I think that ultimately, like, also the people who work those email jobs, they also know about the total valuelessness of what they do, and they're aware on some level that they're just there so that, like, you know, the
Biden so that a big company has a payroll.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So that the United States can, on paper, say that the economy is strong so that Biden gets reelected in 2024. I think everybody knows at some level, like, all that, they know the uselessness of what they're doing, and they hate it too. I've talked to people who work email jobs as well, and they're like, yeah, I want to kill myself every day because I just sit in front of a computer and wait for the email to come that I have to reply to. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to have pity for such people. And the only way that they can redeem themselves is to, like, you know, steal time from their employer by, like, working on some other project while they're supposed to be working. I don't know. I think it's good the better that, or, like, the more people that, the more that the economy transitions into some kind of real work is good, but I don't think anybody that's working an email job is where they want to be in their lives.
They are definitely, like, they would rather do that than, you know, anything else, you know?
Okay, like, that's great.
Like, in, like, Office Space or whatever, when he, like, starts working construction and is like, you know what, this is pretty awesome. It's like, that doesn't exist in real life.
Yeah, yeah, that never happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, 0% of people ever do that, for sure.
So, I don't know. And, I mean, you know, it does suck that people lost their job, but I imagine they can pretty easily get a new fucking job.
Yeah, for sure.
If they have those sort of credentials. And I would, like, I'm interested in Bandcamp, like, changing, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Something different. They've been exactly the same for, like, you know, whatever, 15 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just seems like everything on Bandcamp is really samey. And, like, I understand, like, its importance. Like, it's good to have this platform that, like, anybody can release music on. And, like, SoundCloud sort of sucks. like, SoundCloud had its heyday, but, like, it's not a good place to discover music. Mm-hmm. And, like, the way that I got into Vaporwave was, like, going to these Bandcamp labels and being like, oh, there's 50 albums here that I can just download now, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And, like, that's cool. But, like, I also want them to, like, grow in some way. I want their streaming service to not suck. I want, like, Bandcamp to be easy to use on a mobile device.
Yeah.
I don't use it because it fucking sucks. And also, like, you can't even make playlists on Bandcamp. Like, that's insane. How have they not, like, figured out how to make a playlist function? And also, I really want them to change the name because I hate the fucking name Bandcamp. Because everybody that says it sounds like a fucking, like, Midwestern mom
band camp.
It sucks, dude. It's so stupid.
Like, yeah.
It's so bad.
Yeah, it is very, very kitschy and like very early 2010s ironic. Yeah, kitschy. It's twee. Yes, it's very twee for sure.
Saying anything .bandcamp.com is so incredibly awkward.
Yeah,
I've had to say it so many times on this podcast that I'm angry about it. Like, literally.
It's a death sentence to have to like pitch your artistic endeavor as being something that's on Bandcamp.
Yeah,
say, yeah, find me on Bandcamp. Yeah.
Definitely. And yeah, I mean, they should have should be able to post like videos more easily and stuff like that. Like, there's so many things you can do to Bandcamp. I don't know what SongTrader is going to do. They're probably just going to hollow it out and let it die.
Yeah.
And then hopefully a new service will like show up that like it works better, you know.
Well, I think the new thing, I mean, like, it's moved over like all the fandom shit, all of like people that have like niche interests, they're all Twitch people now. Twitch is now like the new countercultural like app or whatever, you know. But the replacement's
website. You're watching people play video games, but that.
No, but there's also a bunch of other stuff that's on there. It's not just people playing video games.
That is true, I guess.
Yeah. The same way that Discord started out as being a like place for people to, like, your friends who are playing video games to, like, meet up. But it is weird how, like, all art is now congealing around video games in some way, you know? Like, all music sounds like video game music. Fucking all the places where people, like, meet up and form communities are former, like, Twitch and Discord video game hangout chat apps, you know?
The biggest movie in America right now is a video game adaptation.
Mario?
Adaptation. No, Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah, which I heard was garbage. Like,
I'm not going to watch it. I have no, like, I don't know anything about the video games either, but I've heard that it's like a lot of people are going to go see it because there was a new it's a new Scorsese movie, maybe.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, and yeah. It's the Witch of the Blood Moon, Curse of the Witch Moon, something like that.
Yeah. Curse of the Buried Under Bitches, some bullshit. But like, yeah, that shit is trailing behind Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh sure, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Which,
to my knowledge, like, that's not a super famous, like, video game franchise. I've never heard of it.
It's huge. I mean, it's
really?
One of the most popular video games of all time, I think.
Well, I'm not a gamer.
Yeah, it's a mega success. But I don't know. I feel like when I saw that there was a Mario movie, I watched the Mario movie, and I felt that it was basically, I mean, like, it's basically Nintendo trying to, like, realizing that they're not going to be profitable as a game company anymore, and trying to, like, expand their brand into, like, a larger cultural thing. Same way that, like, Disney did with Mickey Mouse, where they didn't make any Mickey Mouse cartoons anymore. Mickey Mouse is just kind of this character that exists that on merch. And that's what they're trying to do with Mario. So video game movies are very disturbing to me.
Well, wasn't that Mario movie, wasn't it like, it was like Mario isn't Mario, he's just Chris Pratt from the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah, he's voiced by Chris Pratt, but he's very much Mario.
Oh.
Yeah.
But he doesn't even have like an Italian accent or anything.
I can't remember. I saw it in Japanese, so I don't know what the fuck.
Nice.
Yeah, dude.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of like, I'm good on like having to deal with the Chris Pratt element of this.
Were there subtitles, or you just had to?
Yeah,
well, you're pretty fluent at this point.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, like, Mario is like written. It's written in easier Japanese because it's for kids. So
okay.
Yeah, it's not too difficult to understand. But yeah, no, it was good. The the Japanese voice actor did have a little bit of an Italian little twang on him when he was saying, like, his Mario catchphrases, so.
Like, Mamma Mia.
Yeah, Mamma Mia, yeah. They're not afraid to get a little bit ethnic over here.
That's what's up. You know what I just watched recently on my phone?
Yeah.
I just got, like, an inkling to watch it was the Elon Musk SNL sketch where he's Wario.
Oh, shit. No, I have not.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, savage.
But yeah, there's that. Yeah, so we've gone through all of our news topics, all of our potpourri. Yeah. All that's left is the culture portion.
Yeah, and speaking of films. Yeah, wait, let me do the segue. We got a segue. Speaking of films around the Halloween season, SlimeWire is taking a brief hiatus from being a Vaporwave review show, and we are becoming an old classic horror movie film review show. And to that end, we have collected for you, you know, some hidden gems, kind of like undiscovered classics that have sort of been lost to time, and we're going to give you our takes on them.
Yeah, they're some of the most fire films ever.
Absolutely. But yeah, we're talking Child's Play.
Well, let's hold on. Okay. Do you want to take? I sort of want to take a little tiny break.
Okay.
All right, because we still have an hour left of this. All right, I will be right back.
Yeah.
Now, how about drums? An instrument everybody loves.
That's it. That's his house. Junk in the box.
So?
I take these things personally, Brad.
Get lost.
Sure, just try my food, apologize, and I'll go.
We have beautiful drums instruments right in the product case. Listen to this. Bass drums. Snare drums.
Improving my kitchens to make our best burgers ever!
They're psycho!
We are back. So before we get into the films that we watched, I wanted to shout out some music. Just shout out, no review. Mm-hmm. But I did recently listen to HVRF Presents A Hard Halloween. It was the Hard Vapor compilation that you can find on the HVRF Central Command Bandcamp page. It's very fire. You got some great names on here. You got Pizza. You got Steel Diamonds, you got X-Wave, you got DJ Mike Pence with a nice track called Trick or Trump.
Oh, hell yeah.
So man. I wonder when this came out. Probably 2016 or around there.
Yeah, I love that.
You got Autumn, you got Shimon here, you got Ozcob, Holy Swag, you got Iacon.
Oh.
You got New Shop. Shouts out New Shop. I love New Shop's Twitter. And then, yeah, playing it off, the last track is awesome. It's Stupid Fucking Monkeys by Sand Timer.
Oh, wow.
Which was HKE's original Hard Vapor alias.
Very nice.
So, I mean, in tradition of, like, we've been ending the show with tracks from the SlimeWire compilation, but the one that we are at right now is very decidedly not Halloween sounding at all. So I'm gonna end the show today with Stupid Fucking Monkeys by Sand Timer instead.
Okay, we're gonna
get back onto the slime comp train next time.
Yeah, give the people what they want, you know.
So big shouts out to that. I'd also like to shout out a MP3 Neptune alias called Picture a Room that just released an album called Hiding Under a Table. So Picture a Room, Hiding Under a Table. And that album is fucking awesome. You should check it out. It's like really weird, dark, ambient, creepy, classic vaporwave. I think you'd really like it. It's really experimental.
Picture a Room, Hiding Under a Table.
So picturearoom.bandcamp.com. And yeah, it's called Hiding Under a Table.
All right, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. Shouts out to MP3 Neptune. Yeah, it's really cool. And then I also wanted to shout out the Sangam Infinity Frequencies collaboration, which is a little EP called Grid of Reality, which is fire. Sangam is like, he's probably taken the mantle of Dream Punk from like 2814 to like, because he just released stuff constantly.
Yeah.
And like, you know, he's much more prolific. And it's all in a similar vein, lots of rain samples and ambient music. And then Infinity Frequencies does those like creepy, like vaporwave loops. And so combining the two styles really worked very well for that.
That
little EP. And you can find that's on Sangam's Bandcamp page, and it's also on Spotify. It's called Grid of Reality. So shouts out Sangam and Infinity Frequencies. Also, there was a funny Infinity Frequencies controversy, which, again, you would have caught if you were on Twitter.
Yes.
But Infinity Frequencies has been sharing these, like, you know, like hologram grid art, you know, like little stills art stuff.
Yeah.
And he did one that was, it was two heads that were looking at each other. And it, you know, it's like Tron. It's like outlines, like neon outlines, you know?
Yeah.
And the Monarch commented and like was like, doesn't it sort of looks like an ass, am I right? But he said that in the most British way possible. Looks a bit like an ass. You know, like some bullshit like that.
Yeah.
And Infinity Frequencies immediately blocked the Monarch, and then a bunch of people were clowning on him. but then he dropped this collab with Sangam. So
cool.
He should be back on his good side, even though he did block the Monarch. But, you know, the Monarch can be annoying. So I understand.
Yeah. We got to give him room to let him grow.
Yeah.
Grow up into a man.
Not that we don't support the Monarch.
Yeah, we do support the Monarch. Yeah. We support him in his emotional and musical development.
For sure.
Yeah.
But then, so that's the vaporwave centric Halloween music I've been listening to. We also wanted to do a special little Halloween thing. You know, it's like a nerdy thing that people do in October where they're like, I'm going to watch a horror movie every night until October 31st.
Yeah.
Heard, like, nerds always say this, and I don't really like watching movies that much because I have a bad attention span. I lose interest and I start going on my phone and I don't know what's happening, and I don't even really like horror movies that much because they scare me, because emotionally I'm like a child. And so I can really only stomach like the shitty like 80s like sort of cheesy horror movies, but I do like those.
Yeah, for sure.
And But so, I don't know, something like got into me that I wanted to watch some horror movies, even though normally I would consider that a cringe behavior.
Sure.
So my idea was I wanted to watch every Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah.
Because I was laughing about the concept of them with a coworker of mine who has seen all of them, and I hadn't seen any of them. And he was telling me about how, like, I was looking them up on Wikipedia, and, like, I know the general idea is, like, this guy kills, like, groups of teenagers, but it gets so convoluted, because there's, like, nine of them. And it ends up getting so convoluted. At one point, the U.S. government has to get involved, and they decide that the military is incapable of killing this guy. And he's literally just a guy.
He's not supernatural at all.
So, like, they have to cryogenically freeze him, and then a group of teenagers discovers him in the future, unlike in space.
Hell yeah.
And then he systematically kills all of them one by one, just like every other movie, except this time it's in space.
Savage.
But I didn't even get to that one. I just watched the first four. And then I've also been a longtime fan of the Child's Play series.
Absolutely.
Specifically 1 through 3. After that came Bride of Chucky, which I don't fuck with because
it's got women in it. So
it's got women in it, and also like it came out after Scream. And have you seen Scream?
Yeah, I've seen Scream.
Yeah, Scream is like after Scream came out, all of the horror movies had to be like, yeah, we know we're trash, but revel in it. You know, they had to become all meta and ironic and lame.
Yeah, for sure.
The Chucky movies after that were just like super like lame.
Oh yeah.
So totally. I don't fuck with those. But the original Child's Play series 1 through 3, love those movies.
Absolutely. And
I remember like my mom didn't let me watch horror movies, and then when my parents divorced, I was at my dad's house without my mom's watchful eye for the first time.
Wow.
And he had like satellite TV. I was still like scared of horror movies, but I figured like, well, Child's Play is about like a doll, right? Like it's not that scary.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll watch that, and
how wrong you were.
That made a lasting impact upon my life.
Yeah, I imagine that sounds like that. Just sounds like an archetypal like millennial story. That exact thing has probably happened to like millions of young boys in America today.
Yeah, their mom didn't let them watch them, and then they divorced their dad.
So they watched.
Their dad was like, "I don't give a shit."
Yeah, and then they started.
Yeah, watch Child's Play.
Yeah, and they got into Insane Clown Posse, and the rest is history.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my God. Beautiful. Yeah. I was from a different economic bracket of society. So that was not my experience. I heard a lot about Child's Play on the playground. Other kids that I knew would watch it and they would explain it to me, and just that scared the shit out of me. So I was like scared of Chucky when I was like 6 years old, just because people told me just the concept. Yes. Without actually having seen the movie. And I remember, like, what broke it for me was, like, I asked somebody, like, why, like, how is he possessed? Why is he alive? And they were like, oh, it's an ancient voodoo curse that was put, that he knows how to do, because he's a strangler, but he's also a practitioner of the voodoo arts that he learned from.
Yeah, see, back in the 80s, the serial killers were also like Satanism and voodoo and magic. You know?
Yeah.
Now they're into like Nick Fuentes.
And crystal meth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Different kind of magic. But
magic.
Yes. But like, yeah, and that kind of lost the mystique for me, because even then I was like, that's a pretty forced, contrived plot element there. It seems like it's really just an excuse to get to the talking doll part, you know? So I stopped being scared of Chucky after I heard that he was ancient voodoo magic. But actually, we have a long history in SlimeWire of Chucky viewership.
I'd forgotten about this.
One of the first films Triton, T2, and I ever watched together and turned our analytic and critical powers to was the first Chucky movie. I think we were in our old apartment.
The reason was because I had been such a large fan of it from childhood. Yeah. I had the DVD. And yeah, we had just moved into an apartment, and I think, yeah, must not have had internet yet or something.
Yeah, something like that. So, watch the original Chucky. I was quite pleased with it then. And on the second viewing, I'm just as pleased. So do you want to start with Chucky and then we can get into Friday the 13th? Because we've both seen Chucky. I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just like, we don't have to talk about Friday the 13th anymore. I'll just say that it's awesome. And I love the fact that every single one is just a systematic one by one killing of a bunch of corny teenagers.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of tits in that movie, which are pretty
nice.
Fire. There's always naked ladies in it. And it's not scary. It's actually really absurdly not scary, because once you realize that every time the music starts playing, that means somebody's about to get killed. And every other scene, the music isn't playing. So literally, like, it's impossible to be shocked by this movie
if
you realize that part of it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But I watched the first four of those. I did not make it to the later... more eclectic. yeah
for sure
versions. But then I recently watched I've seen the first Child's Play a million times, but I recently watched the second one and the third one in the last couple days.
I have my thoughts on the sequels, starting with the first one. The first one has like its own charms, I think. It like, because it's still trying to be like a horror movie.
Yeah.
Even with the second one, they were already like dialing in like the camp and the like novelty aspect of Chucky as a character, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But like the first one is like, it's trying to be a horror movie with this doll. So
it really has like a smaller budget than the other one.
Yeah, it is pretty like edgy and like, I don't know, like definitely they went out on a limb to try to make this movie. Yeah, I mean, like, it holds up as, like, a good piece of cinema in my eyes, you know?
It's all in New York, too. Like, every time, like, movies are filmed in New York, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that adds
in. All the buildings and, like, the creepy elevators and shit.
Totally. It's also very funny that, like, it's written in the 80s and, like, it's about a struggling, working single mother. And she lives in, like, a high-rise, two-story apartment. It was, like, four bedrooms. I mean, jump scares are good. Like, there's a part where the aunt, Andy, the protagonist of the film, is being babysit by his aunt. And his aunt is about to be murdered by Chucky in the first kill of the movie. And,
where he like tackles her and shoves her down the fucking...
Hits her in the face with a hammer and shoves her out of a window.
Yeah.
And I love that. It's a good, clean death, you know? It's not like, it's not over the top. It's real good. But yeah, she's like wandering around. She suspects that somebody has entered the apartment, and then the telephone rings and she's like, ah! And she answers the phone. It's a great jump scare. But my favorite thing about the movie is like, and I think to me, there's a lot of scary things about the movie. One of them is like, anytime like a scary movie has like a sense of humor, it makes the movie way more scary to me. There's something about like a movie that isn't serious and has like an air of like levity to it. With also the like gore and blood and stuff, that makes it way scarier. Yeah. That disturbs me way deeply than like an actually like serious scary movie. Like The Shining isn't that scary because it's serious. You know, it's a great movie, but it's not scary.
Somebody was telling me to watch The Shining. I've tried to watch that movie like 3 times. I can't. It's 3 hours.
Bro, you're absolutely missing out. It's one of the best.
Bro, it's just shots of like trees and shit. I can't do it.
Oh, good. Are you kidding? Okay, anyways. But yeah, I mean, like, while we're talking about The Shining, I think like the best horror movies are always about some kind of like family drama, like a psychosexual family drama, right? The Shining is about the rage of a father, And I think it's kind of lost on us. But I feel like in the 70s, Jack Nicholson in that movie was like everybody's father. You know, like repressed rage at his wife and his own son for like grounding him and forcing him into like a domestic life, you know?
Well, this is all going over my head because I've never been able to sit through that fucking movie.
Okay, well, have you seen the opening scenes? He's like, they're driving up to the hotel, and yeah. Danny's like, "Are we there yet, Dan? How long are we gonna be staying there?" And Jack Nicholson's like, he's like, "Yeah, like okay, just a couple miles to go." And it's very evident that he already hates, like, he hates his son and his wife. And I feel like in the 70s, that's a primal fear of your violent alcoholic father turning against you, you know? And that's why that movie's scary.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. Contrast that with another movie, another great, more recent classic horror movie, The Babadook, which I don't know if you've seen.
We watched it together at Victor's apartment, but I was really high.
Oh, okay. Well, if you remember anything...
Dab.
Yeah, if you remember the content of that movie, it is a single mother who is possessed by a demon, and it symbolizes her own ambivalence towards being a mother and her kind of hatred of her own child, who she can't get to behave. She has a shitty
kid. Yeah, and it's also, like, bullshit, because it's, like... Then there's like a twee Tim Burton like monster that looks
stupid. Yeah. The twee Tim Burton monster is kind of cringe, but the actual movie is scary because it's all about her. She can't deal with the fact that she blames her child for her husband's death, and she can't deal with the rage that she has towards her child, and so it comes out as her becoming this demon, and that's why it's scary, because it's a fundamental like psychological thing that everybody knows about, or everybody can imagine, hating your child, you know.
Okay.
This movie is great because it is Chucky is like the, I don't know, he's like the embodiment of like the like aggressive dark impulses that children have towards their parents that they can't deal with.
I see.
Yeah, that's what it is. Chucky is the double of Andy. I think it's like pretty kind of obvious, I don't know. But yeah, Chucky is the dark aggressive impulses of Andy towards his single mother who made a series of bad decisions, divorced her husband, and now has to work at like a department store and can't afford to get him nice shit, you know?
Is it explained why, where the husband is or why he's out?
No. There's never anything about the husband. But, okay. Yeah. But I mean, like, you start out with Andy's first line is he's watching the TV and there's an episode of Good Guys playing and it ends and he's like, I've seen this before. And then he turns it off. So it establishes him as being kind of like a pissed off, like, you know.
Yeah, like a curmudgeon-y little
He's a snotty little shit. Yeah. And when his mom buys him the Good Guys, like, laundry set or whatever, he's like, "Oh, Mom, why didn't you buy me the doll? I want the doll." So he's frustrated with his mother and her inability to provide him with the... with what he demands. And, you know, in Lacanian psychoanalytic theory...
hell yes.
Yeah, so the... an infant starts out by, like... And so the theory of desire... Lacan famously says that desire is... demand minus need. So, like, a baby, the idea is, like, where you get your impetus for doing anything, your innermost secret desires that you have. Start out, as a child, you are crying for you have needs. You get hungry, you shit your diaper, or whatever. You don't understand any of these needs as being what they really are, right? So, like, you're a baby, you're hungry, you don't know what hungry is. You just know that you're kind of, like, pissed off. So you cry, right? And your cry is an attempt to get your mother to address the need that you have, right? But over time, this cry becomes not only a call for help, but a demand for your mother to prove her love to you. Because as a helpless infant, you are completely dependent on your mother, and you are plagued by anxiety that she will abandon you. So your demands that you make on her are attempts to get her to prove her love to you, right? So your cries for your needs to be satisfied eventually turn into demands for love. And this becomes eventually the desire that plagues us, and it's why desire can never be satisfied, and you will always be a desiring being. Nothing that you ever get will satisfy you. And so this is what Andy, in his demand for the Chucky doll, is a demand for his mother to show proof of her love for him. And in failing to realize this proof, this inspires Andy's psychotic rage against his mother. But as a six-year-old child, he can't, like, process this, right? He doesn't know. Like, he can't come to terms with the fact that he has this murderous rage towards his deadbeat mom. So he has to embody it in the fantasy character of Chucky.
But then Chucky's also real.
Yeah, Chucky's real in the movie, but the movie is, like, the movie is a fantasy.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so if you take the movie minus Chucky, it's just a movie about a single mother living with her son, and her son's kind of, you know, pissed off at his mom. He's going through emotional problems. So, yeah. But...
Nice.
Yeah, this aggressive, like, the aggressive impulse of a child is ultimately directed at itself, right? There's another part of, like, Lacanian psychoanalysis where the child experiences itself as a, like, when you're a tiny baby infant, you don't understand the fact that your body is, like, a whole thing, right? So you feel all of these, like, sensations, but you don't understand that you are one thing. So you just kind of feel, like, wind blowing on your face and, you know, having to take a shit and a bug crawling on your leg. You experience all these things as, like, separate entities. You don't understand that you are, like, a physical object in the world until you eventually go through the mirror stage. You see yourself in the mirror, right? And you, for the first time, realize, oh, wow, I am, like, a physical object in the real world. I am one thing. I am a whole thing, right? I'm, like, a single object.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not just a bundle of sensations. And this inspires you to feel like an intense anxiety and jealousy of your own mirror image. You're not quite sure whether you are the thing in the mirror, and you're not quite sure whether you can live up to this task of being a single unity, right? Like a single thing. So you have an immense amount of anxiety that manifests as a desire to destroy the mirror image of yourself, right? And this is, according to Jacques Lacan, this is like the primal origin of all aggression, of all, like, violent fantasies. right? So it's the desire to like shatter your mirror image, your mirror self, right?
Okay, give me just one sec. I'm gonna put a coat on because I'm really cold. Give me one second. Sorry, I got the window open. It's freezing over here.
Oh yeah, you're all good.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. So like, an infant has the desire to shatter its own self-image, to try to resolve the anxiety of being a person. Okay, and that's why Chucky, at the end, is trying to kill Andy. If you buy the idea that Chucky is the unconscious fantasy of Andy, the unconscious aggression of a child is always going to be directed in the end at itself. So that's why Chucky has to kill Andy.
And he also has to steal his soul so he can get out of the body of the doll.
Yes, it's he has to become Andy. Because ultimately they are the same thing. So Andy's struggle is to banish Chucky, which is Chucky's really his unconscious desires. He has to overcome those unconscious aggressive impulses in order to become to move on in his psychological development, right? And that sounds like, you know, that's a bunch of English major bullshit. But I
I'm gonna be honest, this all went over my head when I was watching the film.
I do think that is kind of like, I think there is something in the reason why people think Chucky is like especially scary, you know? I think it is kind of because Chucky reminds us of like dark, violent, like the violent thoughts of a child, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And these are fantasies and desires that we can all relate to. And that's why Chucky is especially scary. That's why watching him shuffle around, you know, he's always like scuttling around. It's not so much that he's a doll, it's the fact that he's a little child that's trying to murder people.
That is
really terrifying. And then I was telling you, the other thing that I think is really fucking terrifying about Chucky is that, like, within the movie, he is just like an adult, like 38-year-old man who is like sneaking into these people's houses and trying to kill them. You know, like, he's not like a demon or like an otherworldly monster, you know? He's just
an asshole.
Yeah, he's just some dick, you know? And so, like, and that was a very good choice. Like, if his voice was like, I don't know, like a low, like, demon voice or something, it wouldn't be that scary. But, like, the first scene where, you know when, like, the scene where Andy's mom realizes that Chucky doesn't have any batteries in him?
Yeah, and he's like, fuck you, bitch.
Yeah. She's like, okay, I'm just gonna throw this doll in the fire. And so he can't, like, he can't act anymore. And so he has to... Yeah, and so he just instantly comes to life and he's like, you fucking bitch, you fucking dumb bitch, I'll get you! And like, yeah, he's just a dick. Like, he's just a very vulgar, he's just an asshole. And that's why, that's really scary to me. And all of the scenes where he's talking and being like, I'll fucking kill you, don't think I'm not gonna get you, is like, really terrifying to me.
Voice actor did a good job for sure.
Yeah. There's just like something about he's low class. I think there's an economic like element to it too. He's low class. He's a dirty bum, you know. Terrifying. So yeah, the first Chucky I thought was like unironically really good.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I mean, it's really well thought out. I don't think that they were thinking about psychoanalysis when they made the movie, but it is like just really great. And it's genuinely scary to me. The second movie is also great.
It's the best one.
Yeah. It embraces the camp. It embraces, like, it evolves the formula, you know, in a lot of ways. And I think the jump scares in the second one are really good. And you can really tell that they understood that they have to have, the jump scares need to be more complicated, and there need to be more, like, moments of suspense in each jump scare, you know?
Yeah, it's a sequel. It has to be better, you know?
Yeah. So, like, the scene where the teacher is looking through the closet to try to find Chucky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, there's three false starts in that scare, right? Like, a basketball falls on her head, and then she, like, pulls back some, like, jerseys, and there's a basketball that looks like Chucky's, like, hair, kind of, but it's not. And then at the very end, Chucky stabs her in the gut with a ruler. And it's like, yeah, very, very, very tight, very good horror jump scare writing there.
The other thing that's really scary that is present in the first movie but like is explored more in the second movie is the idea, and this is what always terrified me as a kid, is like the idea of being a kid and knowing what's going on but nobody will believe you. You can't explain it to anybody. And yeah. The character, the kid, what's his name? Andy.
Yeah.
He like in that point in the movie he like has nobody at all. Teacher fucking hates him. His like foster parents don't like give a shit about him. His mom is like has been locked up in a psychiatric ward because she believed him, you know.
Just the
idea of being like completely alone and like hopeless.
While a
maniac is trying to kill you.
Yeah, there is That's something. There's. Yeah, it's very terrifying that he can be. He's an inanimate object, so like, he can just like drop dead at any time. And nobody, you can never discover him. I also think there's something very scary about, like, I mean, it is just, like, a very deep fear of, like, being a kid and, like, looking in your room and, like, you can't find your doll. Or, like, you go to bed at night and, like, you open your eyes and you see, like, yeah, I don't know. You're a doll sitting in the corner of your room. And you're like, did I put that there? You know? I don't remember putting it there. Right? Like, because it could just be that you moved it and you don't remember. Or it could be that I got up and walked over there by itself. Yeah, it's great. It's a great premise. It's very unfortunate that, like, Chucky became so, like, I don't know, like,
dumb
in clown posse, like, wigger adjacent media, you know?
Like cholo shit.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I think like to this day, rappers like hold Chucky dolls in their music videos.
Yeah.
That's a thing that like Ski Mask the Slump God did that, and YoungBoy did that.
Yeah.
Some other people.
Yeah, it's absolutely that's a perfect it's cholo adjacent. It's definitely like oversized novelty tea type shit, you know.
Yeah, well, that's I think most of that is because of the Bride of Chucky, Seed of Chucky bullshit that came out afterwards.
Yeah,
but the original run of three movies is pretty good.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty big quality dip in the third movie. But
the third movie isn't as good as I remember, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, it's okay. It's passable. There's some good deaths in there. But I think the second movie did perfect it. Like the final the final confrontation. It's the perfect final confrontation against Chucky, because it has like three false starts, and going through the entire like factory, you know.
That's in the second one.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. The second one. They like it goes in and it shows you like the machine that inserts eyes into the Chucky dolls, and you're like, you know, if you're like an adult viewer, you're like, okay, well, this like thematic resonance, that's how Chucky's gonna die. The machine is going to stab these eyes into his head, and that's what's gonna kill him, because that's how he was resurrected in the beginning of the movie. And okay, so that's what's gonna happen. And then you move on, and then you get to the machine, which I also thought was very funny. You know, like when they kill Chucky the first time, before they kill him for good in the second movie, where they like put him into the machine and it just like melts him down.
Hello?
You know that part?
Oh no.
It's on the conveyor belt. You know what I'm saying? Morgan? Hello? Hello? Okay.
Hold on, folks.
What?
We resume. Okay, we're all good.
All right, cool. Sorry about that, folks. There was a little bit of a internet communication breakdown on my end of things.
It's all good. We only got 16 minutes left of recording, so.
Okay, well, we better summarize the entire Chucky movies with the remaining time. But yeah, okay, so you know like the ending scene where they're confronting him at the factory, right?
Yeah.
And they're, did you hear the part where I talked about the eyeball machine?
Yes.
Yeah. So you think, oh, that's how he's going to die. Thematic resonance, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, like, the second fake out where they put him into that machine and it melts him down?
Yeah. And then he comes back again.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny that, like, this factory just has a machine where its job is to just, like...
spray toxic
like, stick
waste.
12...
Yeah.
Like, attach, like, 12 arms and legs onto a doll for some reason. You know, like it makes no sense at all. But yeah, they have like three fake outs. It takes such a long time. So first they put him there and then they bathe him with acid. He comes back and then they fill him up with like hot gas and explode him.
Yeah.
And it's like, it was very, I did not predict how they were going to kill him, but they also gave you all of the hints to like everything that was going to happen. So it's not like it was just like random.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, excellent job on the final confrontation in that one.
One thing that's funny about the second movie, and it's funny in the third movie too, but it's more funny in the second movie, is that like the second movie they show you this factory where they're producing thousands of these dolls. You know?
Yeah.
Like way too many of them, you know. But they always find a convoluted reason to where they have to repair the original doll.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense. Like, I guess the idea in the movie is like, well, we need to prove people that the doll is an issue. So we need to remake the doll. You completely refurbish the original doll. And then that doesn't even matter. Like, they don't even use it for anything because it just kills the guy immediately. And then...
Yeah.
I think in the third movie, it's like, they didn't clean the thing out, and so the blood like leaked into the shit, you know.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah,
some blood. Like, which also, like, shouldn't it, like, if it mixes in with the plastic, wouldn't it like leak into like, I don't know, like 5,000 Chucky dolls? You know,
that sort of would have been like where you'd think the third sequel would go. Was that now there's an army of like Chuckies? You know.
Yeah. Within the logic of the movie, that seems like what should happen. But, it is very silly that they recreate the doll. Also, there's no reason that, like, why does he come back alive once they put his eyes back in? That doesn't make any sense. And then also, like, so the machine electrocutes and kills a man. And then later that night, the, like, toy company executive has for some reason decided to like take the doll back with him personally in his car.
Yeah.
A. And B, he's trying to get like he's trying to get it in that night.
Yeah.
Like
he's gotta go buy the vodka. Plot with
Yeah, he's gotta go buy vodka so he can go fuck this lady. Like he like nothing it didn't faze him at all. He just saw a man get electrocuted to death. And it doesn't bother him.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, very fun, very good stuff, you know. Yeah, there's a lot of just great shit in the movie in general. Two thumbs up to the original Chucky and Child's Play 2. Child's Play 3, I don't know. I didn't really have that much to say about it.
I like the ending, like the standoff inside the fucking toy factory is great.
Yeah.
It's not the toy factory. It's in the theme park. Like that's
cool.
I also thought it was interesting how the main, you know, the new main character in this is a young black boy, which you know that's all the new like woke stuff. It's like you got to replace Andy Barkley with a little black kid. They did this.
Yeah,
they did it 25 years ago, people.
And Chucky was ahead of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, that, I mean, that's really what I had to say about Chucky.
I do like the continuation of like Andy's life just gets more and more hopeless to the point where shitty. Now the state doesn't care about him, and so they're sending him to this shitty military school.
Yeah.
I also thought it was really weird how like the person that's in charge of all of them is just like another shitty teenager. Like he isn't in this movie for like some reason. Like they're there but they don't like do anything.
Oh yeah, the main thing that I liked about the third Chucky movie and part of the second Chucky movie is that like Andy goes from like genuine terror to just like exasperation eventually.
Yeah,
like he's just like, come on, for fuck's sake, why, like please believe me. And like he goes from he's not terrified anymore. Like when he's trying to tell the adults what's happening, he's like ugh, all right, okay. yeah like he's going to school and he's like talking to like the other foster care girl. And she's like, oh wow, I can't believe you like tied yourself up last night or whatever. And he's like, listen, he's gonna come to the school, he's gonna try to kill you. And he's just like, okay, well, guess I'll go to school now. Like, yeah, he's just pissed off.
I
like how that character element evolves in him.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're fire movies. I've loved them since I was young. That's,
they're great.
I can't think of any other like awesome fucking horror movie. I've tried to watch like Halloween. That shit sucks.
It's like, yeah, for sure.
It's just like a POV of a dude with a knife and then an annoying soundtrack. Like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Friday the 13th is pretty cool, but not nearly as cool as Chucky, though.
No, hell no. Yeah, it's a pretty high bar to pass.
Word.
Yeah, well, all right.
I guess that has been the Hamas Hard Vapor Halloween. Actually, is this... I did a Twitter poll. It's another reason you gotta get on Twitter. Whether I should call this Hamas Hard Vapor Halloween or Hard Vapor Hamas Halloween. Which one rolls off the tongue better? Let's check the poll.
I think... let's see.
Well, what do you think? I'll add your vote in.
Hamas Hard Vapor Halloween.
That seems to be the clear winner at 69% against the Hard Vapor Hamas Halloween at 31%. 16 votes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear I'm on the winning team.
Shouts out also. Yes, I'm going to include some like spooky Halloween music. There is a pretty spooky the two songs that we had from the Slime Comp to put in this episode are pretty good ones, so I'm gonna include them, just not the last one but the first one. So is gonna be, let me look it up really quick because I can't remember the name of it, but I know what it sounds like. It's going to be Ain't It Funny by OneIro98, which was actually the first submission for the compilation I got. And then after that, we got Spine by VH Stress. Either Stress or VH Estress. I don't know how you say the name. But both tracks are fire. And then, like I said, normally I'm supposed to end this episode with another Slime Comp song, but I'm going to skip that, and I'm going to end it with Stupid Fucking Monkeys by Sand Timer, which you can find on the HVRF Hard Halloween compilation.
Love it.
And happy Halloween. Halloween is my second favorite holiday of the holiday season, first being, of course, New Year's. Where would you rank it?
I'm going third underneath Christmas, my favorite.
Of course.
New Year's, second favorite, then Halloween.
All right, and then Thanksgiving can suck.
Yeah, Thanksgiving is never good.
All right, well, yes, that is it. Sayonara.
And a sayonara to you.
Nice. Thank you.
Slime Wire. Choose your own adventure.